last week I finished with the execution of the king, which is in 1649. And from 1649 to 1660, there is no king. And that is what I'm going to explain at the moment. Here are the key moments, the key dates. From 1649 to 1660, for 11 years, there is no king. Now, 11 years is not a very long time, but historically, it's extremely shocking for everybody. No king, my God. There are no republics in the rest of Europe, yes?
No king between the 1649 to...
Yeah, to 1660, yes, that's correct. 11 years, yeah. Yeah, it's a lovely death, that one, see. Yeah, 11 years with no king, and I will be explaining what was the alternative system at this time. But remember, it was extremely surprising. No king, my God. It seemed impossible. The king was restored in 1660. We have a king again. The son of the executed king becomes king again in 1660. So, in some ways, you could be tempted to think, oh, nothing has changed. The king is executed. 11 years later, his son is king. Nothing has changed. This is absolutely untrue. The king will never have the same power again. One historian wrote, "What has been written by the sword cannot be erased by the pen." Ce qui a été écrit avec l'épée ne peut pas être effacé avec le stylo. So what this means in this case is that in appearance we have a king again, but the balance between the king and Parliament has changed forever. Parliament is the boss. And Parliament will demonstrate that they are the boss in 1688... I will explain all this in a moment. In 1688, there is a new king, and the Parliament don't like the king, and so they change the king. Yeah. The situation is completely new. Now it is the Parliament who is absolutely the boss, and I will explain why this is important. But first of all, what happens in this period, these 11 years, which were officially called at the time, the official name was the Commonwealth. And today some people say the Republic, a dangerous word. Let's see what happens. Well, first of all, they had to make sure that the king's friends would not try to rebel against the new system. So a few royalists were executed after the king. A few royalists were executed. And a new law was passed abolishing the monarchy. Une loi pour abolir la monarchie. Parce que c'est une chose d'exécuter le roi. C'est une chose d'abolir la monarchie. On n'en aura plus jamais à ce qu'il pensait. What else did they do? They developed, in fact, a constitution. They wrote a constitution. And the name of this constitution was the Instrument of Government. The Instrument of Government is the name of the new constitution introduced by Oliver Cromwell and his friends after they have executed the king. Now, the Instrument of Government is very interesting document because it is the first written constitution in England. As you know, perhaps you know, today in France you have a written constitution. In America they have a written constitution. In England there is no written constitution. This is not the way we do things in England. But in this period, for the first and only time, in these 11 years, there were three different written constitutions. A de P on an appui. Okay, and the first one was the Instrument of Government. Okay, so what does the Instrument of Government say? The instrument of government says that they will organise the country in a traditional way with one person at the top and then an assembly. It seems that this is how countries prefer to organise. In a monarchy, you have the king and the parliament. In a republic, you have the president and the parliament. This seems to be the preferred way for countries to organise, and they followed the same rule. They had a Lord Protector. That was the name of the boss, yeah, the Lord Protector. But he's not a dictator. The Lord Protector and the Parliament. The Lord Protector was Oliver Cromwell. But notice that So the Lord Protector was Oliver Cromwell, and his idea of the best way to run a country is that in the assembly you need the most pure Christians. A very religious idea of the best way to run a country. Remember the old way, the royalist way. Who do you want to run the country? The king and the people of aristocratic blood. The aristocratic principle, that's the old one. Oliver Cromwell has a new idea. It's not democracy. It's not the whole people must decide. No. It is the rule of the godly. Donc le règne par les plus purs, les chrétiens les plus purs. Et il s'y comptait, bien sûr. Naturellement. Okay, so this was their idea, and there were many laws passed to improve the religion. There was freedom of religion at this time. Under Cromwell, there was freedom of religion, except for Catholics. Okay? Yeah. Any Protestants, no problem. No, not Catholics. Because Catholics, well, they probably want Spain to win a war against England. This was the idea. Okay, so this is the instrument of government, which was the established system at the time. The next important event in this period, so we're talking about after 1649, was the conquest of Ireland. Now, Ireland was dominated by England already, but at this time, in 1650, the Irish revolted against English rule. The Irish were still Catholic, and even today, Ireland is still a Catholic country.
Did the Irish revolt in 1660?
No, 1650, 51... Yeah, 1650-51, yeah, the beginning. And Cromwell, Oliver Cromwell and the army went to Ireland to fight against the revolts. This was a hard time to be Irish. Why did Cromwell and the army want to defeat the Irish? One, they are Catholics. They will probably help our enemy. If you want to invade England, it's good to start in Ireland. It's a good place to be. So if Spain wanted to invade England, they could find help in Ireland. It was a realistic fear. Two, Ireland is a poor country, an agricultural country, and we English Protestants, if we take the land, we will organise it better, with better technology. So the English felt that they were superior in technology and therefore they had the right to go and take Ireland. C'est un peu l'argument des Européens quand ils arrivent en Amérique du Nord. En gros, ces Indiens, de toute façon, ils n'utilisent pas bien la terre, on peut le prendre. Ils sont arriérés. Yeah. So the third reason is that the English already had a lot of racist ideas about the Irish. They considered the Irish to be inferior. Inferior, Catholics, not very good at agriculture. And so, and finally, Oliver Cromwell and his army believed that God wants us to dominate. We are the best Christians. Catholicism is a horrible thing. God hates Catholicism. God will help us to destroy the Irish Catholics. They went to Ireland, and there are many battles. There are 10 battles or something. But the most important one is Drogheda. C'est une ville que les Irlandais n'ont pas oublié. And this is the capture of Drogheda, where Oliver Cromwell arrived, and thousands of Irish soldiers were killed. On les enfermait dans les églises, on brûlait les églises, les gens dedans. Classique de la guerre coloniale. Pas joli à voir. Okay, so, interesting situation. In England, Oliver Cromwell represented progress and modern ideas. We don't want the king to be absolute ruler. We want freedom of religion. We want modern technology and so on. However, in Ireland, Cromwell represented a very, very repressive, terribly, terribly violent massacre. So, when Oliver Cromwell won the battles in Ireland, they took the land, and the land of Ireland was distributed among the soldiers of Oliver Cromwell. And the Catholics, the Irish Catholics, were obliged to go to live in the west of Ireland. Littéralement, il donne une date, ceux qui n'ont pas traversé ce fleuve-là avant la fin novembre, on les tue tous. Okay, and so the Irish Catholics had to go to the west. Of course, the west is the worst lands. Of course, donc c'est un petit peu comme les Indiens de Marie qui étaient parqués dans les réserves pour que la meilleure terre ça reste aux Indiens qui arrivaient. C'est un peu le même processus. 20,000 question. Yeah. 20,000 Irish people were sent to the West Indies as slaves. 20,000 Irlandais étaient vendus comme esclaves aux Antilles. Au début du commerce des esclaves, les esclaves pouvaient être blancs, noirs, n'importe quoi. C'est après qu'ils se sont spécialisés dans les Africains. Okay, so... yeah. Okay, so, terrible situation. This is what we call the Cromwellian settlement. The Cromwellian settlement. Il faut faire un peu attention avec le mot settlement, parce que on l'a déjà vu avec Elizabethan settlements. Et the Elizabethan settlement, c'est le compromis organisé par Elizabeth. Mais the Cromwellian settlement, c'est la colonisation de Cromwell. This is the moment when most of the land in Ireland was taken from the Catholics and given to the Protestants. Now, of course, the Protestant soldiers of Oliver Cromwell, they received some land in Ireland. Good. Mostly, they sold it to some merchants in London. So the result was very quickly that almost all the land in Ireland was the property of English landlords or Scottish landlords. Et c'est quelque chose qui a causé des inégalités qui durent jusqu'à aujourd'hui. Il y a encore un conflit 400 ans après, 500 ans après. On ne peut pas dire que c'est une réussite comme règlement de la crise. Okay, so the Cromwellian settlement. As I say, even today, the Irish have not forgotten the Cromwellian settlement. This is the moment when their land is taken from them. It can make people rather angry sometimes if you take their land. So, let's go back to England. Let's go back to England. And the system in England. Cromwell then has introduced the instrument of government. Did you Cromwell yet? And what is in the instrument of government? Well, a few modern ideas. I mentioned already there was freedom of religion for everybody except the Catholics. Number two, there is a standing army of 30,000 soldiers. Donc une armée permanente de 30,000 soldats. C'est énorme. Je ne sais pas si je l'ai évoqué plus tôt, mais les rois, 50 ans avant, ils n'avaient pas d'armée permanente. Ils recrutaient une armée chaque fois qu'il y avait une guerre. Yeah? Okay, so a standing army of 30,000 soldiers, it's a lot. Okay, so why? Why would Oliver Cromwell now have a standing army of 30,000 soldiers? First of all, because of France and Spain. Remember, when there is the French Revolution, many countries send an army against the French Revolution in 1789. When there is the Russian Revolution in 1917, many countries send an army against the Russian Revolution. And so, in a way, it's very surprising that the French did not send an army against the English Commonwealth. C'était occupé à se battre entre eux en Europe, c'est essentiellement comme ça. Okay, so firstly, Cromwell wanted a standing army because he was frightened of the French. And secondly, to stabilise the society. They were worried about some revolts. There were some revolts. There were some revolts. Not very big revolts, but there were some revolts. For example, in 1655. In 1655, there was a revolt. C'est la même chose. Je suis obligé un petit peu de simplifier. Alors, j'ai trouvé trois petites révoltes. Alors, je vous donne un parce que, bon, sinon, vos têtes vont exploser. Yeah. In 1655, the Penruddock Uprising. And what was the Penruddock Uprising? It was very simple. It was a revolt by people who wanted to re-establish the king. It was a royalist uprising. It was defeated. Okay. Now, the instrument of government, the first written constitution of England, lasted only 2 years.
Alors, quand on écrit une nouvelle constitution, c'est pour quand vous avez envie un jour, hein, vaut mieux que ça dure plus que 2 ans, une constitution, c'est beaucoup. Hein.
Okay, so the first one only lasted 2 years. When there was this uprising, Oliver Cromwell was unhappy with the system founded by the instrument of government, and he decided to replace it with another system.
Mais il y a une dernière chose que je voulais dire sur l'instrument of government.
Yes, first of all, a lot more people voted. Under the instrument of government, anybody could vote if they had more than £200 a year. This was the idea. The instrument of government, the constitution, says you can vote if you have more than £200 a year in income.
C'est pas mal d'argent à l'époque, quand même. Mais c'est beaucoup plus de votants que sous le roi précédent.
So, notice that the levelers idea, the radical levelers idea that all men should vote, has disappeared. Yeah, all men can vote if they have £200 a year.
Do you have a question?
C'est la Constitution qui a duré 2 ans et qui a été créée par Cromwell.
Par Cromwell, c'est
Cromwell.
Oui.
Et après, il en a créé une autre.
Ah voilà, j'y viens justement. Okay, so what happens when the instrument of government is not good enough for Cromwell? Well, he institutes a new system, completely new system, the rule of the major generals. That is to say, a direct military government. The country is divided into a series of regions, and each region has a military governor who is responsible to Oliver Cromwell. En fait, il abandonne temporairement même la démocratie limitée qu'il avait installée, et il revient et il vient à quelque chose de très militaire. Hein, chaque région militaire, un dirigeant militaire. This is a period of many Puritan laws. Yeah, in every region they pass laws to abolish some of the sports and entertainments which the Puritans did not like. For example, bear baiting and cockfighting. C'était une tradition en France aussi, le bear baiting. C'est torturer des ours en public pour rigoler. C'est vraiment ça, c'est exactement ça. C'est les faire manger vivants par des chiens. Sympa, hein? Okay, yeah. And this was abolished by Cromwell. Also, they tried to ban theatre. The theatre for the Puritans was a bad thing against religion. And so they passed laws banning the theatre and a lot of laws against alcohol. Against drunkenness. So this is a Puritan sort of government. There were also laws against swearing. Ils ont passé des lois contre les gros mots en public. Dire des gros mots en public. Ce qui est encore le cas d'ailleurs. Vous n'avez pas le droit de dire dans un supermarché n'importe quel gros mot. De crier à un moment, hein, il y a un policier qui dit, il y a une loi contre ça. Dis-toi, tu veux une question? Yeah, no, it's okay. Yeah, okay. So, a Puritan way of doing things. However, this system only lasted for 2 years. Okay. So we can see we have 2 years of the instrument of governments and then 2 years of the rule of the major generals. It is very difficult for Cromwell to stabilize a new system. The old system with the king and the Church of England was not democratic, it was not just, but it was relatively stable. It's quite difficult to establish a new stable system. So they have another go, and it's 1657. We have another petition. Another constitution. Another constitution. And the name of this constitution is the Humble Petition and Advice. C'est un peu drôle comme nom pour une constitution. Une pétition et des conseils humbles. Why not? That's the name of the new constitution. The Humble Petition and Advice. So, what was the Humble Petition and Advice? Well, it was written by some of the members of Parliament who felt that the system established by Cromwell was not sufficiently stable. And the Humble Petition and Advice was a constitution, and it also said, they said to Oliver Cromwell, would you like to be king? They offered the crown to Oliver Cromwell. Oliver Cromwell had to think about it a long time. And he decided, no, this is not possible. God does not want me to be king. We had a war in the name of God to eliminate the kings, so I cannot accept to be king. So the authors of the humble petition and advice wrote a new version which did not mention king, but they proposed this new constitution where Oliver Cromwell has more power. And this was established in 1657. Also, in 1657, although Cromwell was not to be king, they had a big ceremony to show the world that he was again Lord Protector. Peut-être avez-vous vu une peinture très célèbre, le Sacre de Napoléon, quand il se fait empereur. Énorme cérémonie, comme si c'était un roi. And it's a little bit the same idea that although Cromwell does not want a king, he understands that for the people of England, they are simple people, they cannot read and write. They need to see ceremony, to see who is boss. It needs to be very visible. Yeah. And so they have a big ceremony, and Oliver Cromwell is Lord Protector under the new constitution, the humble petition and advice. So what is new about the humble petition and advice is that under the new constitution, the Lord Protector, Oliver Cromwell, can choose his own successor. Il faut qu'il s'organise avant de mourir pour choisir le prochain. So, this is not a democratic system because the Lord Protector is not elected. And Oliver Cromwell is Lord Protector for life until he dies. But it is not a royalist constitution because the title of Lord Protector does not automatically pass to Oliver Cromwell's son. Yeah. So for the moment we have this intermediate solution where we have Oliver Cromwell, you are our leader until you die and you can choose your successor. But it is not an aristocratic principle. Remember that the aristocratic principle, the royalist principle, is I am king because my blood is better than yours. That's the idea. It's a very incredible idea, really. And therefore, my son must be king because we have a superior family to you. You are peasants. I am the king. Okay. So that's where we are with the humble petition and advice in 1657. The humble petition and advice, then, is the second written constitution and the last one. Depuis, il n'y a pas eu de constitution écrite en Angleterre. C'était la dernière. Vous allez voir, ça va durer 3 ans. Et puis, jusqu'à ce jour, il n'y a pas de constitution écrite. Now, French people often find this rather bizarre. The English, they are so stupid, they don't have a written constitution. This is a cultural difference. The English think, the French, they are so stupid, they need to write down their constitution because they can't remember it. It's just a cultural difference, yeah? France is a very written culture. The code civil, the code du travail, the code du commerce. We don't have these in England. We don't have codes, you know, which is just sort of do things the way we used to do them. It's very informal. It's a very informal society, it is. Okay, so the humble petition and advice. Cromwell dies in 1658. And just before he dies, he says, I have chosen my successor. It is my son, Richard Cromwell. Tout ça pour ça. It was not an aristocratic principle, but in fact he chooses his son to be the successor, Richard Cromwell. Donc, bien sûr, Oliver Cromwell, c'est le plus célèbre, mais Richard Cromwell, c'est donc le fils. There was a problem with Richard. He didn't want to be Lord Protector. He didn't like the idea. For a couple of years, there is quite a lot of instability Some people are saying, oh, well, maybe we should find a king again. Other people say, oh, no, we want a more Puritan country. Let's go back to the rule of the major generals.
So, confused
situation. And quite an increasing section of the rich in England are thinking, perhaps we should go back to a royal system. And therefore, in fact, after 2 years, the Parliament, a section of the Parliament, begins to negotiate with Charles II for the re-establishment of the monarchy. Okay, Charles II is the son of Charles I, who was executed. He is in France with his friend Louis. Je crois que c'est Louis. En général, c'est Louis, ce siècle-là, non? 17, 18, 23. Yeah, okay. So, he is in France, and there is a section of the Parliament in England who would like the king to come back and be king of England again. Of course, you can imagine he's very happy. But it's a difficult, delicate political situation. And the solution is found when, in 1660, Charles writes the Declaration of Breda. And the Declaration of Breda, vous le trouverez dans votre brochure, the Declaration of Breda is very simple. It is an amnesty. There was a long civil war, and some of you people executed my father, but it's okay. So the Declaration of Breda is a compromise. The Parliament says, okay, you can be king again. And the king says, okay, I will forget what you all did during the Civil War. Charles II n'est pas du tout en position d'imposer ces conditions. Il est obligé de dire, oh, voilà, donc amnistie pour tous ceux pendant la civile. Vous voulez bien que je revienne, hein? Donc il n'est pas du tout en position de débarquer avec une armée imposée, hein? Mais il fait cette négociation. Questions? Yeah. Clearish? C'est le fils du roi exécuté, de celui qui a été exécuté, de Charles Ier. Non, de Charles Ier. Ah, Charles Ier. C'est qui Charles Ier? Qu'est-ce qui lui est arrivé la semaine dernière? Charles Ier, c'est celui qui a organisé la guerre civile contre le Parlement, qui a perdu et qui s'est fait décapiter. Voilà. OK? 58. C'est de notoriété commune. Okay, right, okay, so new situation. The king is coming back. We have the restoration. The restoration of the Stuarts then. But remembering what I said at the beginning of the class, what has been written by the sword cannot be taken away by the pen. Ce qui a été écrit par l'épée ne peut pas être effacé par le stylo. C'est-à-dire qu'il y a une guerre civile, on a exécuté le roi, on a viré, on a réorganisé tout le pays. Quand le roi revient, il n'aurait jamais le même pouvoir qu'avant. Il n'oserait jamais être le... Okay, and we will see that it's not so easy. There is a lot of conflict. The Scottish army came down to London to protect the king as he arrived. But there was not a lot of opposition. Most of the rich thought, well, the system under Cromwell was very unstable. Richard Cromwell had no solution. What else can we do? If we are sure that there will be an amnesty, et sans doute qu'on va garder les terres qu'on a pris aux royalistes. Okay, that's okay. So we have the king who's come back. And you have the amnesty, except Charles II makes an exception to the amnesty for all the people who have who signed the execution warrant of his father. And I think three or four of the people who signed "We want to execute the king" are still living. They are tortured, cut into four, and their heads are exhibited in front of the House of Commons. Oliver Cromwell died in 1658. But when Charles II comes back to England, they dig up Oliver Cromwell, they cut him, and they put his head in front of the Palace of Westminster for 20 years. So, because for the royalists, the execution of Charles I is traumatic. And they want everybody to see, this is what happens to your head. D'accord, après votre mort, mais bon. If you try executing kings, yeah, they want to terrify people. Yeah? Plus on lit sur le XVIIe siècle, plus on a envie de vivre au XXIe. Vraiment, c'est cool. J'avais même pas de Walkman. Okay, right. Ou de lecteur MP3, je crois que ça s'appelle maintenant. Right, okay. So that's what happens when he comes back. J'avais encore une chose à dire sur le sur les exécutions là et les. Les trucs, non, c'est pas bien grave. Oh yes. Of course, the royalists, even today, are very unhappy about these 11 years. These 11 years of Cromwell, the Republic, the Commonwealth, the royalists do not like these. If you go to the Tower of London, they have a picture of every king of England, Henry VIII, Edward, etc. A long corridor with a picture of all the kings of England. And you arrive at Charles I, 1625 to 49. Charles II, 1665. And there is no information, zero information. There's just a little gap. And you find a long list, a long... Dans le couloir de portrait des rois, et là où il y a ces 11 ans sans roi, il n'y a rien de marqué, c'est pas marqué. Là, Cromwell était chef, ou quelque chose. Non, il n'y a rien du tout, simplement. On passe au suivant, on va l'oublier. And this is why the royalist historians, they don't say the Commonwealth, they say the interregnum, l'entre-deux-règnes. Les historiens royalistes, ils appellent ces 11 ans l'entre-deux-règnes. Il ne s'est rien passé, vous pouvez circuler. Okay, so, the restoration, here we have then the restoration of the crown and also of the church, of course. When you have the restoration of the crown, Charles II, you also have the re-establishment of the Church of England as dominance. And in the next period, there will be two kings. Charles II will reign from 1660 to 1685, and James II will reign from 1665 to 1688. They will continue to try to have more power. But in reality, they have much less power than before. The Parliament in 1660 declares that Charles II has always been the rightful king. He calls the Parliament And the Parliament is very much royalist. The Parliament is made up of people who are convinced that this is the best option. And in fact, for 17 years, they will have the same Parliament. So there are no conflicts like there was before the Civil War. Well, there was some conflicts about religion. I will come back to religion in a moment. But perhaps the most important agreement is that Charles II agrees to abandon some of the new taxes invented by his father. And in return, he will receive an annual salary from the Parliament. Okay, so a completely new situation. Now the king is saying, okay, I won't invent any new taxes. I will accept your salary. Okay, so we can see who is boss. Parliament is boss now. They give a salary. Charles I said, no. I am the king. I can make taxes when I want. God wants me to be king, and my job is to make taxes when I need them. This is not your problem, Parliament. Charles II says, okay, I won't make any more taxes, and I will be satisfied with an annual salary, which the Parliament will decide. Very clear new situation. The Parliament is the boss. We will come back to it. There was a strong attempt to reinforce the Church of England by the Conventicle Act of 1664. Remember, under the rule of Oliver Cromwell, the different dissidents and sects and pure Protestants and radical Protestants were very successful. Freedom of religion. Yes, I have the best religion. No, I have the best religion. And this is a problem for the Restoration. And they try to solve this problem by the Conventicle Act. The Conventicle Act says, you can have a religious meeting if you wish, but the maximum number of people in your religious meeting is 5. Except for the Church of England. So the Conventicle Act is an act of repression. They are trying to stop the success of the Puritans and the dissidents and the Quakers and the different groups. They're trying to bring people back under the control of the Church of England. And the way they do this is by passing this new law. Okay, you can have your religious meeting, but 5 people maximum. Now, if you are religious, you understand that it's very important for a religion to have big groups of people. When I was little, I went to Catholic Mass. 500 people singing, noise, that's religion. If you have a maximum of 5 people, it's not a very exciting religion. Okay? But notice the importance of this law. This also means that the Church of England and the King did not feel confident enough to eliminate the sects. It was not possible for them to say, all religions are illegal except the Church of England. Politically too difficult. And so they introduced this act, a maximum of 5 people at the meeting. Donc c'est une répression mesurée. Ils ne veulent pas provoquer une révolte non plus. Alors ils espèrent que les différentes religions vont dire « Oui, c'est dur de se réunir qu'à 5, mais bon, quand même, on est 5 avec Dieu. Avec Dieu, ça fait 6. » Alors, yeah? Okay, to see things like that. Okay, very important thing. Okay, je fais... Yes?
You say Church in England or...
Church of England, yes. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The Protestant Church of England, as established by Elizabeth, the Church of England, the 39 Articles, the Book of Common Prayer, etc., etc. Okay. It all came back. So, there we go. Parenthesis. Let's leave the king for a moment, and let's leave religion for a moment, and look at a couple of terrible events in London in 1665. In 1665, our old friend, the plague, came back to London. And in 1666, one of the biggest events of London history took place, the Great Fire of London. So let's look first of all at the plague or the Black Death, as we called it. It is not the first time it came to England, but this was a terrible plague. The plague is carried by fleas on rats. Si vous avez lu le livre de Albert Camus, vous le saurez. Unfortunately, most people in London thought that the plague was carried by cats and dogs. So they killed all the cats and all the dogs. The rats were very happy. Yeah. So it was a big problem. Yeah, they did not have the medical understanding. Donc ils ne savaient pas seulement de médicaments, mais aussi de savoir quelle est la forme de la transmission. Alors une fois qu'ils ont tué tous les rats, c'était plutôt content, quoi. Okay, so, terrible situation. All of the rich left London. The College of Surgeons, le Collège Royal des Chirurgiens, c'est l'Association Nationale des Docteurs, a quitté le pays. C'est jamais bon signe. Comme vous voyez, tous les médecins ont quitté le pays. Mauvais signe. Okay? Yeah, remember that at this time, the doctors were really only interested in rich people anyway. They left the country. The king left London and they closed the gates of London. Nobody can leave London. By the middle of July, over 1,000 deaths were reported every week. 1,000 deaths every week. And they killed 40,000 dogs and 200,000 cats. Okay. Now, so in this situation, you're in London and you're not allowed to leave London, except if you have a certificate that says John Mullen does not have the plague, signed Dr. Smith. If I have this certificate, I can leave London. I have a certificate here. Who will give me £1,000 for the certificate? So, big problem of panic and forgery. People were selling certificates, false certificates, because if you could leave London, you were probably safe. So, a terrible panic situation. If you were a doctor or a nurse, they passed a new law that says you have to carry a coloured stick when you walk around the street, along the streets, so everybody can keep out of the way. If in somebody's house, if they have the plague, we send the army to brick up the wall, to brick up the doors, and you're not allowed out of the house for a few weeks until you are dead or healthy. Probably dead. Sorry. Okay, I'm sorry about this. Very upsetting, isn't it? Okay, so terrible, terrible situation. At the maximum point, there were 6,000 deaths every week. And in total, there were probably 100,000 dead. Bien sûr, Londres est beaucoup plus petit qu'aujourd'hui. Je sais pas le pourcentage, mais c'est... It's a lot of people. One interesting story from this time is the little village not very far from London called Eyam
in Derbyshire.
And they realised that there was plague in the village. There was plague in the village. And they understood that if they left the village, they would probably pass the plague on to the next village and it would continue across the country. And so, with their priests, they organised that everybody agreed that they would not leave the village because they did not want to put people in danger. There were 292 villagers, and at the end, 31 did not die. But they were very brave people. Yeah, they were very, very brave people because they agreed that this was the best thing to do because they did not want the next village to get the plague and the next village and the next village. And even today, every year in the village of Eyam, they have a special ceremony to say, yeah, that these were brave people. It's full of fair comment. Okay, now, the next event, the Great Fire of London.
Bien sûr, il s'agit de la grande incendie, pas d'une incendie grande.
The Great Fire of London, not just because it was very big, but also because it was very useful. It finally killed the plague. By burning down all these old buildings, that was the final. Now, the plague was already declining, but the Great Fire was the final event which sorted it out. It was an accident. Of course, almost all of the buildings, this is 1666, almost all of the buildings are made of wood. Yeah, wood. So once it burns, it burns. And the London burned for weeks, and at the end, 13,000 houses were burnt, donc 13,000 maisons, 80 churches, including St. Paul's Cathedral, was destroyed. And this is symbolic today, because if you go to London today, you see, well, first of all, St. Paul's Cathedral, and many other great buildings, of whom the architect was Christopher Wren. Let's say that after the Great Fire, they profited from the situation to build some grand, new, modern buildings, like St. Paul's Cathedral,
avec le grand dôme qui à l'époque c'est un exploit technologique certain, mais moi je dis c'est pas si facile à faire.
Okay, so that's the social history of the time, if you like, the plague and then the fire. All of this in a period when the economy is becoming more modern. The economy is becoming more modern. The English are winning very slowly. The English are winning against the Dutch contre les Hollandais pour dominer les mers. Les Anglais sont en train de prendre le dessus. This is also a time when Charles II continues the establishment of the empire very slowly.
L'Empire britannique n'était pas construit exprès, en fait. Sinon, il est un peu là, et puis on s'est retrouvé avec un empire. Un peu.
Okay, and a very famous place. You know North Carolina and South Carolina, the states of the United States of America. Why Carolina? It is after the name of Charles II, who gave this land to some businessmen from London. So again, we still have the traditional Christian, British Christian view of North America. There are people in North America, but they are not Christians, so it's not important. This land is mine. It belongs to the king. I will give it to you if you give me money. Yeah, so this is the imperial
attitude. Yeah? Though it's not necessary to negotiate with the American Indians. They're not Christians, they don't count. Also, in this period, we have the introduction of the Navigation Acts and the Bank of England. These are two developments which are part of the modernization of the English economy. The Navigation Acts are to impose a monopoly for British ships on trade coming to Britain and leaving Britain. And the Bank of England, there's a new idea to have a central bank in England. But under Charles II, this very important, the Bank of England makes it much easier to organise trade and companies and modern business. Yeah, so we're having an economic modernisation which is going on all the time. This is very conflictual. There are two wars. Well, il y en avait déjà une guerre contre les Hollandais sous Cromwell. Et ici, nous avons la deuxième guerre contre les Hollandais. The Second Dutch War. On a the First Dutch War sous Cromwell. And the Second Dutch War sous Charles II. Comme quoi, malgré les changements des institutions, l'ennemi, c'est le même. Hein? L'ennemi, c'est celui qui a autant de commerce que les Anglais, presque, les Hollandais. This is at the beginning of the Second Dutch War. The English capture New Amsterdam. Where is New Amsterdam? No, any idea? New Amsterdam, do you know where New Amsterdam is? Yeah, it's today it's called something different. New York, New York. So of course, New Amsterdam, Dutch. And under Charles II, it is captured and they change the name to New York. Pas à cause de la ville de York, mais parce que le frère de Charles, c'est le duc de York. Okay, so that's how we call it, New York. New York, New York, so good they named it twice, etc. Also, at the same time, Charles II is trying to find help and friendship from the French king, Louis XIV. And in 1670, Charles signs with Louis the Treaty of Dover. Le traité de Douvres. 1670, between Charles II of England and Louis XIV of France. And what does it say? Well, it says that Louis will give money every year to Charles, he needs the money, and Charles agrees to convert to Catholicism. Alors Charles signe le traité, il promet de se convertir au catholicisme. Le traité est secret, hein, il ne pouvait pas dire ça publiquement. OK? So, of course, this would be a big problem in Britain if Charles converted to Catholicism. The Parliament would not be happy. You know, the Protestantism is at the centre of all the merchants and the modernisers and so on. They were not going to like this. So this is the reason why he kept it secret. But after 1870, there are some conflicts with the Parliament because Charles wants the Catholics in England to have a better situation. And in fact, Charles issues in 1672... the Declaration of Indulgence.
Alors notons bien que la situation a beaucoup changé en 150 ans. Quand on en était à Mary, elle pensait pouvoir remettre en place le catholicisme en Angleterre. Charles, il est au courant que ce n'est plus possible, mais il veut changer les lois pour que les catholiques soient mieux traités, aussi pour des raisons religieuses, mais aussi pour aller mieux avec ses alliés catholiques à l'étranger. So, in 1672, Charles issues the Declaration of Indulgence. And what does it say? It simply says, we will no longer punish Roman Catholics and other dissenters. So more freedom of religion, especially for Roman Catholics. And also, in the same year, he goes for the third war against the Dutch. And he supports France. He supports Catholic France against the Dutch. The Parliament is not happy. Although the Parliament supports the King, does not want to go back to Cromwell or a system like that, nevertheless, the Parliament does not want more freedom for Catholics. They say, France, Spain, if we want to maintain English power, then more freedom for Catholics is a bad idea. And to show that the Parliament are the most powerful, when the Parliament objected, Charles was obliged to withdraw the Declaration of Indulgence. Ok, donc contraste avec son père, quand il y avait le gros conflit avec le Parlement, à la fin, il dit, bon, si c'est comme ça, on va faire la guerre civile. Charles II, pas du tout. S'il y a vraiment un conflit, d'accord, je retire. Okay, so the situation is completely different from previously. And Charles II has another problem, an old problem which the previous kings had as well. He does not have a son. Yes, okay. He does not have a son. And this is very worrying for the Parliament, because if Charles II does not have a son, the next king is going to be James. James is Charles's brother. And, vous avez deviné, James is a Catholic. Okay? So, the Parliament is unhappy because there is a danger of a Catholic king. Now, we are now in the end of the 17th century. There is no real danger of re-establishing Catholicism as the national religion. But there is a real danger of having a Catholic king. So, what can they do, the Parliament? What can the Parliament do? Well, the Parliament would very much like to avoid a Catholic king. And so, they introduce, a section of the Parliament introduces at this point, the Exclusion Bill. Do you remember what a bill is? Oui, voilà. Un projet de loi. Pas une loi, un projet de loi. On ne sait pas. Ils ne sont pas arrivés à faire une loi. And the Exclusion Bill is very simple. It simply says, we, the Parliament, declare that James, the Duke of York, cannot be king. Okay, so we have here this rather unusual situation. If you have a monarchy, you need to follow the rules of a monarchy. Is there a son? No. Is there a brother? Yes, he's king. So here we have a conflict between two different principles, the old Royalist principle, monarchy is monarchy, and if you are the brother of the king, and he has no son, you're king. And the power of parliaments. The power of parliament which believes that a Catholic king would mean no more modernization, more old-fashioned rules and regulations, more hierarchy, etc. The people of London are very hostile to having a Catholic king. There are riots in London, demonstrations, riots. We don't want a Catholic king. In support of the exclusion bill. And, entre parenthèses, une des choses intéressantes de cette crise politique, c'est que c'est la naissance, c'est à ce moment-là que naissent les deux grands partis politiques qui vont dominer pendant 200 ans, les conservateurs et les libéraux. They begin as those in favour of the exclusion bill, qui plus tard, beaucoup plus tard, vont être les libéraux, and those who oppose the exclusion bill and think it's okay to have a Catholic king, qui vont être plus tard donc les conservateurs. So, terrible crisis. People believe that a Catholic king will become a dictator, like Charles I was. He was close to the Catholics and he was a bit of a dictator. Most of the parliament believe that it's impossible to have a Catholic king and still have parliamentary power. So, if they are opposed to the brother of the king for the next king, who do they want as king? Nobody is really sure. There are different ideas. One group says, we support the Duke of Monmouth. Duke of Monmouth. The Duke of Monmouth was the son of Charles II. Mais monsieur, monsieur, vous venez dire qu'il n'avait pas de fils. J'aurais dû dire qu'il n'avait pas de fils légitime. Voilà. Il en avait 9 enfants. Illégitime. OK? Mais ça compte pas. C'est un monde un peu bizarre. OK. So the Duke of... A small group supported the idea that the Duke of Monmouth, Charles II's illegitimate son, should be king. This is a little ridiculous, because if you are a monarchist, you believe in legitimacy. That's the point. So it was a very unusual sort of idea. Okay, so a terrible crisis. Charles dissolves the parliament. The next year, Charles recalls the parliament. Somebody else says, we want an exclusion bill. Charles dissolves the parliament. The next year, again. Yeah? Okay, so terrible crisis. It seems to be impossible for the king and the parliament to find a compromise on this question. There was even a smaller... Sorry. Mind you. There was even an attempt to kill the king. Il y avait une conspiration qui comptait tuer à la fois le roi et en plus son frère. So a group of Protestants tried to organize to kill the king and his brother in order to stop any possibility of there being a Catholic king. And then, all of a sudden, in 1685, Charles II died. Charles II died. Just before he died, he got out his mobile phone and he phoned out, hello, is that the priest? Can you come? I need you quickly. And he converted to Catholicism. He was baptized as a Catholic just before he died. Okay? So,
This is interesting. It shows that for the individual, this was a very important question. It's not just a political question, it's better to be a Catholic or a Protestant. Charles II died in 1685, and just before he converted to Catholicism.
He died in 1685?
Yeah, 1685. Died of something normal. And he was... and he was succeeded, the new king was his brother, James II, who was a Catholic. So the Parliament is very worried. 1685, we have a new king, James II. He's a Catholic. He will not try to impose Catholicism like Mary did. This is impossible now. Let's finish that period. So what will he do? Okay, so the first thing about him is that he is the last Catholic king of England. Okay, he was the last Catholic king of England. He tried to increase the power of the Catholics. He appointed Catholics to the head of the army. The Parliament is not happy. The head of the army is Catholics. He dissolved the Parliament immediately. And he issued again the Declaration of Indulgence. So the Declaration of Indulgence, which is a declaration that there will be freedom of religion for Catholics, this was issued by Charles II and then withdrawn because Parliament was too powerful. And James II will again issue the Declaration of Indulgence and say that Catholics must have freedom of religion. At this point, 7 Protestant leaders have an idea. The Protestant historians call them the Immortal 7. Les 7 immortels. On dirait en West End. The Immortal 7 are the 7 Protestant leaders who write a letter to William in Holland, a Protestant prince, and say, please come to England with an army. We want you to replace our king. Okay, very simple idea. Now, of course, the Immortal 7 is not an objective description. It's the description of the supporters. They were quite brave people. It's dangerous.
Organiser une conspiration contre le roi pour le faire remplacer par un autre qui arrive avec une armée, c'est très bien si ça marche. Si ça marche pas, vous avez forte tendance d'être
exécuté très lentement. Okay, so be careful.
Do be careful.
So that's what they did. They wrote this letter. Je crois que vous avez la lettre dans votre brochure. To William of Orange, qui est un prince protestant, dont la femme est un des enfants de Charles.
C'est une des filles de Charles.
Il y avait des filles, mais pas des garçons légitimes. And William and Mary arrive in England with an army in 1688. And this is what some people think.
Si je mets des guillemets, c'est pour dire que ce n'est pas une description objective.
This is often called the Glorious Revolution. Another historian said it was not glorious and it was not a revolution.
So what happened is that the Catholic king was replaced by a Protestant who arrived with an army from Holland. Okay? Most of the parliament supported this army which arrived. You can see the situation has completely changed. The parliament wants to change the king. They change the king. James disappears to France, and we have William and Mary as the new king and queen of England. Now, so once again, we had a situation where the parliament, against a Catholic or almost Catholic king, against a king who was not allowing parliament enough power, they wanted a solution. However, they did not want the solution of Oliver Cromwell. Oliver Cromwell's solution was, let's organise the people of England to fight against the king. The 1688 solution was, let's invite a foreign prince to arrive with an army. Why did they prefer this option? The fundamental reason is that the Civil War was also the levellers, the diggers, ideas of democracy, revolt, revolution, more radical sects. Yeah, that the mobilising the people means giving freedom to the people and allowing them to think and propose. Remember the new model army where the soldiers elected their officers. The elites of 1688 did not want to see hundreds of thousands of people with democratic ideas in their heads. They preferred the option, let's have a foreign army who arrives, gets rid of the king, and then go home again. Yeah, remember, the problem with the new model army was that they built up, they got rid of the king, and then the new model army refused to go home, and they said, we want more change. So the 1688, which was not a revolution, was the solution of the elite of England to change the king without mobilising the people. And it was very successful. James had a very bad time. Quand arrive l'armée, peu à peu, les amis de James, ils rejoignent l'autre côté. La semaine suivante, c'est sa fille qui rejoint l'autre côté. C'est déprimant quand même. T'es là, t'as une armée contre l'autre armée. Ta fille, elle sort, et tu penses qu'elle sort en boîte de nuit, et puis voilà, elle est partie rejoindre l'armée de l'autre côté. So, James had very, very little support. Very, very little support. The time of Catholicism and traditionalism was over. And of course, after 1688, the power is definitively and forever in the hands of the Parliament. Pour vous donner une petite idée, même aujourd'hui, la reine a le droit de refuser de signer une loi si ça lui plaît pas. La dernière fois que ça a été fait, c'était en 1702. On peut dire que c'est un pouvoir un peu théorique. Okay, so this is the reason we still have kings and queens in England today is because they found a compromise in 1688 where the king and the queen have no power. And that was possible. Thank you very much for listening. That was long. I'll see you next week for, I don't know what, something else.